This episode of East Meets West is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/east. Welcome to East Meets West, episode 289. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Roger Chang.
And this is the show where Roger and I just talk for a half hour about whatever we want. Sometimes not even for a half hour, sometimes for more than a half hour. Sometimes when we're doing the Google Hangout, as we're doing today, guests show up unannounced.
Literally. They just pop in and say, hey.
It's happened. We've had people show up while grocery shopping. We've had people show up not realizing we were recording a podcast.
I think they were.
You think they were what?
They knew we were shooting a podcast. It was just a convenient excuse.
Oh, the people who pretended like, oh, yeah. I had no idea. Well, I guess I'll stick around and be on your
podcast. You were making dinner? Oh, you have an extra place?
Oh, well, I don't want to impose on your, may I? Can I stay and eat some podcast? Do you have extra podcast? You think it's like that?
Podcast.
Hey, we got a piece of feedback on the last show from FastD63. Says, I know you are a busy guy, so you probably forgot that there have been several Doctor Who stories with multiple doctors. In the episodes, they have always treated each other as separate people and argued constantly with each other. They have also used the Doctor forgetting things that happened in a former regeneration as a plot device on many occasions. Thank you and Roger for continuing this episode. It was very entertaining. Thank you for giving me the benefit of the doubt, FastD63. I hadn't forgotten about the multiple Doctor stories. In fact, they're some of my favorite, like the Three Doctors and the Five Doctors. However, I had sort of forgotten that they do treat each other, or not forgotten, but I forgot to take into account that in those episodes, they treat each other as separate people. Especially the ones who haven't become that doctor. That's the way I've always thought about it, Roger. I don't know about you. I always feel like the ones who are arguing are the ones who are like, well, I haven't become you yet, so I don't really know you.
I can see it as if you were to meet yourself as a teenager now that you're an adult in various stages of your life. I'm sure you would not. I don't know. I've always had the feeling that if I were to meet a replica of myself that was somehow different by age or by upbringing, I would argue with them. Actually, I would argue with myself even if they were exactly the same. That's what I would
You'd say. Argue with a plant, Roger. Let's be honest.
I have argued with plants.
You can do it quite
well. Why does your sap come on my car in the clear fluid and like require like paint thinner to get off? It's ridiculous.
I don't know. I think you could chalk that up to personality, but I think FastD has got us when he says they've used the Doctor forgetting things in a former regeneration as a plot device, and that is something I definitely did forget and sort of undermines this idea of a continuous personality, at least as continuous as I was trying to make it.
Now, I remember he'd forgot things, but I didn't remember it being a critical plot device central to the story.
FastD is saying it was critical, but he's just saying they used that. Before.
I just remember he's forgotten things like people or places. It's like it's very familiar, but there was something about this place I just don't remember. But it's very important. And then, you know.
It'll come to me. This seems really familiar. I mean, when you're 700 years old, you're going to forget a few things, right?
I don't know. I mean, if you were a species that lived that long, you would think your memory would be just as...
Why do you think that?
Well, then,
I mean, I asked that question. Just let me add that because as we get older, our memory gets worse.
Well, I'm not saying that his won't get worse, but I mean, relative speaking, I mean, I would think it would only manifest itself. Like, say, if they have a 1,000-year lifespan or longer, it would happen in the last 10%. You know, just looking at him, I would still believe the doctor is in his prime, you know, in his mid-30s, early 30s.
Well, he seems to get younger with every regeneration.
I think that has to do with broadening the appeal, but yes.
With casting. I like the idea that every regeneration makes him younger, thus bringing him closer to death. But then they have gotten rid of the limit on regenerations.
Yes. It's very Merlin, in fact. Wasn't Merlin also
Merlin? Merlin aged in reverse, yeah. He would, so, I mean, in most of the legends.
Arthurian legends.
Yeah.
So
he
I'll
was
be
the original Benjamin Button.
If he comes out, if they come out with a doctor who's like, you know, Justin Bieber age, yeah, it's probably, that series probably you should stick a fork in it at that point.
Are you excited about the new companion? Because I love me some Amy Pond. She's become one of my faves. Not sure if she passes Martha Jones for me, but nobody else likes Martha Jones nearly as much as me, so that's just weird. I'm just weird.
I don't like Martha Jones. I liked her initially. I don't like what she turned, what they made her into.
You mean when she was in Unit?
Yeah, that was so, it's like, whatever. It's just like, it's kind of like the same thing. Like, I loved Rose when they started out. And then
me
she
too.
Just,
well, I actually love Christopher Eccleston too. I thought that was an amazing pairing.
But I don't know what happened to Rose. She just got obnoxious and annoying at the end. The only one I can say that I liked from beginning to end was Donna.
See, and Donna, I felt the same way about from beginning to end, but it was always like, I'm amused. She's fine. I like her. I don't dislike her. I don't roll my eyes and say, oh, what a horrible companion. She's a good companion. And I think actually I'll take that back. At the very end, I thought she really like knocked it out of the park. But Donna, not my favorite. And I don't mean to say, like, not my favorite, like, being all ironic, like, she's actually my least. It's just, I don't know. I don't know why I don't like Donna as much as other people.
I think I'll have to say that I liked Donna because she wasn't afraid to kind of talk back. I like that.
Sure.
It was like, you know, what?
Yeah, but well, it was okay. I mean, Martha wasn't afraid, but that's what I liked about Martha Jones was she was the one who stood up to the doctor more, at least than Rose did, and she had a backbone and she believed in herself. I felt like Donna still had a little lack of confidence that she was trying to overcome.
It's just something about her personality. It's constantly like, I wouldn't say antagonistic, but it's not always like, oh, of course, you're the doctor. I'll automatically believe you.
And I guess that's what I'm getting at, because I know what you're saying, and it's absolutely true. But I always felt like with Donna, her antagonism to the doctor was out of a lack of understanding. In other words, she either lacked some confidence or lacked understanding, so she lashed out. I felt like Martha always stood up to the doctor because she knew what was important to her.
And this is my thing. This is why Donna appeals to me so much. She does that because she doesn't know. And when you're the doctor, at some point you do kind of have to explain. Because she was in a wedding, but when she got dragged away for the initial adventure. So
right.
It's like, you know, you kind of have to let me know what's happening because I don't know because I've never done it before. You know, you can't assume. And this is the thing is... the doctors are written in a way where they, or at least the more recent Tennant, and definitely with Smith, certain things are kind of assumed. You know, there's a very parochial attitude, like, well, you don't need to understand. I'm the doctor. I'll work it out. And it's just like, well, you know, Donna's like, well, who the hell are you? It's like, you know, let me know. I like that. It's just, it's very much, it's a much more genuine reaction.
I felt like Martha projected some of that as well. And I felt like she projected it in a more mature fashion. Donna sometimes felt like that obstinate kid who just acts out because they don't know what else to do. And so they, you know, through a lack of confidence in themselves, they just decide to overreact and bluster. And I'm over explaining that. I don't feel like Donna was immature or a brat, but she got close to it sometimes. And that
she was definitely brash. She was abrasive.
Yeah.
She was definitely abrasive. That actually is part of the appeal. Mm. I like that abrasive.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just being disagreeable. It's like, you know, I'm letting you know I disagree with you.
Yeah,
this is
less starting to be less about Donna Noble and just more about what I like and dislike in people. I dislike people who argue first and think later. I don't mind people who argue and think at the same time, who can back up what they're thinking about. But people who just knee-jerk... say like, well, I'm just going to argue with you. But and it's obvious that they haven't really thought about what they're saying, and they really don't have any premise or any understanding of what you're saying. That just bugs me. I'm like, do some work. You can be argumentative. Roger, you're very argumentative. We talked about that. I'm very argumentative, but you always have backing for it. You even if you're wrong, or even if you know you're wrong, you have a plausible reason why you're picking your position. And most of the time, you don't think you're wrong. Most of the time, you're right. So I respect that. Whereas there's the people who just sort of like lash out and are obnoxious and loud because they're trying to overcome their actual problems, to me, that just turns me off right away. And I say I'm talking about people now because I don't think Donna was that bad. She maybe had an element of that, but that's not who Donna was.
And it's, I agree with that. I mean, in a person, when you're dealing with them, especially if it's a coworker, that's totally understandable. But understanding the situation she came from, I was in a wedding and then pulled away. To me, it seems a very natural reaction. To me, it's a lot more, that's kind of how I would be if someone was yanking me through.
I don't know. You would have a better idea. You would figure out a little more, make a little more effort to figure out what's going on, I think, but rather than just start shouting first. And I think Donna does that a little bit. She tries to figure out, but when she can't, she starts shouting.
And to be honest, this is kind of one of the reasons why I like Amy Pond as much. It's not more or less than any of those. I actually kind of like her on par with Donna in many ways, is that her experience is different. Is she looked up to the doctor when she was young. She was this guy who held out a promise that he kind of, he delivered on much, much, much later. But it was more of a fascination and kind of a almost, I don't want to say... Almost like is it not a father figure, but someone you really look up to, a very respectful.
Definitely a role model.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was very much her reaction to the situation that the doctor put it is not unlike kind of like a father and child, like you know there's a deep seated bond and connection, but also they are different people. And how they view things are totally different. Like, the doctor was, for all intents and purposes, near immortal, and Amy isn't. And it was that one episode where they got stuck on that weird planet where she gets locked and gets aged. So she's like 70 or 60 on that planet. That her reaction of feeling betrayed, that betrayal. I thought that was dead on. I thought that was exactly what a person should feel. I mean, not maybe everyone, but it's like, I was betrayed. I've been stuck here. Never came back for me. You know, it's that disillusionment because there was that
the breaking of faith. Initially.
Exactly.
Yeah. I admire Amy Pond as a character. I think she stands up to the doctor and it's because he has abandoned her more than once. And so that episode took it to great extreme, but she has felt abandoned and always welcomes him back because she does have a kind of love for him. But it is, like you say, it's more the love of a role model or a best friend than it is a romantic sort of love. And it's, that's why she gets so angry at him. And she does stand up and say, no, I see a little of Martha Jones in her. She's able to have a backbone and say, no, these are the things that are important to me. But what we get with Amy Pond is we get to see her learn that. Martha just was kind of like that from that first episode in the hospital. Amy Pond wasn't like that at first. And we've gotten to see kind of her backstory and see her grow that resistance to say, no, doctor, you're fantastic and fabulous, but I have to do what's right for me now. And I feel like, since Rose Tyler, that's been a theme for all of these companions that we're talking about, is how they resist the charms of the doctor and how they actually remove themselves because in the end, as wonderful as he is also toxic having a normal, satisfying human life.
And it's interesting because, Amy Pond was with Rory And it was kind of the point there. You thought, oh, maybe Rory was just going to get killed and ditched and kind of left
and,
as an aside. And they eventually get married.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of cool. It's like, you know, he's not the doctor. He can't do all those wonderful things, but he is important to me, and he fulfills a very important part of my life. And it's you know, in the doctor's defense, I mean, and this is the, you know, he carries a great weight upon his shoulders. I mean, he's responsible for the death of his people, and as well as supposedly the death of the Daleks. And they kind of go through that with Chris Eccleston, and then Tennant, and then Smith. But you totally get the idea. He's just a lonely dude. You know, he's going out and he's trying to find that next adventure because he doesn't want to be alone. He doesn't want to have to stand there and look at himself or be with himself for very long because it would be unbearable. I mean, I think Neil Gaiman's episode with the Doctor's wife was brilliant. I mean, it kind of, you know, brought that all to bear because he connected so well with essentially his lifelong partner, the TARDIS.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Well, that was so obviously a fan episode. Neil Gaiman was obviously a fan of Doctor Who. There, you know, it shone through, and so that meeting of love and fanship with talent and experience made for what I think is one of the best Doctor Who episodes.
I love that one.
Definitely of the reboot, possibly of the entire run.
Reboot,
reimagining, I don't know, whatever you want to call it.
I would say reimagining.
I don't know if reimagining is right because they haven't changed. They're consistent. They're continuous. And
a revamping. How about a revamp?
Yeah, a restart. Same operating system. All your files are there. They're just cleaned out the cache.
It's just like a different version of Windows,
yeah.
Moving from XP to 7.
Let's speaking of whatever we were speaking about, here's a transition to our ad. Today's episode of East Meets West is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. Listeners of this podcast get a free audiobook. If you've been putting off trying Audible, do it now. Go get a free audiobook. All you got to do is go to audiblepodcast.com/east. I believe that is the correct. Let me double check that URL. Audiblepodcast.com/east. Yes, that is correct. And it will get you a free audiobook. We have confirmation. One good one that I want to throw out there just came out. Red Shirts, a novel with three codas by John Scalzi, narrated by Will Wheaton. This is the second Scalzi book that Will Wheaton has narrated. He narrated Fuzzy Nation as well. Red Shirts is about Ensign Andrew Dahl, who's been assigned to the Universal Union capital ship Intrepid, flagship of the Universal Union, since the year 2456. And he starts to figure out some things about people who wear red shirts on this spaceship. What do you think, Roger?
It's cool.
Are you actually intrigued by this book? Do you know about this book?
Yes. I like the concept of red shirts. I don't like the way how I don't appreciate the way they're so unceremoniously used as plot fodder.
Yeah, and neither does Ensign Andrew Dahl. And so he's going to try to figure out how to avoid all of the costs of being a red shirt. So check it out. The audiobook's read by Will Wheaton. He does a great job reading audiobooks. That is just one of the many types of books. They've got nonfiction, they've got fiction, they've got magazines. Go to audiblepodcast.com/east, sign up, get a free one. We thank them for their support of East Meets West. Do you think that red shirts get a bad deal?
A bad.
Should they get better benefits?
I think it's interesting. Like the red shirts actually should get a better reputation than they've gotten so far. Granted, they always die or disappear. But if you think about it, knowing the percentage of people in your field of work tend to get bumped off more than the other guys. And still taking that job and waking up and doing it, That says something for that personality.
We should honor their sacrifice.
Exactly. We should have a red shirt day.
We should have red shirt day. I love that idea. Can we do that?
Everyone go out and sacrifice yourself somehow.
Well, I don't know about that part, now that I'm thinking about it. But just a red shirt. I don't know. I'll have to read the book. I've started reading the book, but I haven't gotten very far into it. I got too much to read these days. But once I get the book, I think I'm going to get the audiobook now. The audiobook's out with Will Wheaton reading it. That's pretty awesome. Once I get in, maybe there'll be a day that kind of becomes obvious to be Red Shirt Memorial Day. Or maybe we just do it on Memorial Day. But then that kind of undermines Memorial Day. People might not take it in the spirit it's intended.
Why don't we do fictional... what do you call those guys? Red shirts. There has to be another term for red shirts. The fall guy, Patsy, no. A lot of pawns. Pawn day.
Pawn far
day? Pawn day.
What?
That would be good.
What are you suggesting?
Pawns. I was like, maybe we'll call it something else.
Why not call it Red Shirts Day? What's wrong with calling it Red Shirts Day?
All right, Red Shirts Day. But you could celebrate any kind of character.
I'm with you there. It doesn't have to be limited to the red shirts in Star Trek, but it's sort of everybody gets what that means when you say it. So it can also be honoring any non-speaking character who falls in the line of duty.
Yes, the nameless supporting actor, background actors that get it. Usually early on in the episode in order to build some sort of tension.
It's that thin, non-speaking line that separates us from the enemy.
Although they usually have,
Yeah, they do. That's true. They do speak. They may not have lines, per se, but they're often groans or shouts or screams. Fair point.
I mean, if you think about it, they're kind of like the good version of the evil minion, right? Because the evil minions are legion, but they also get bumped off pretty quick.
Well, yeah, that's a good point, actually. Could we honor evil minions on Red Shirts Day, or is that... Do we only have to honor the good guys?
I think you would just have to honor the good guys. Keep the spirit.
You need a separate but equal evil minion day, is what you're saying.
Yeah, you could have a minion day instead of the minion day, like they used to have.
The minion day?
You just call it...
The day after Dominion Day, we'll have the Minion Day. And you'll eat filet mignon.
Yeah. You usually come right after Canada Day.
Yeah. I'm into all of this. I've got to find out what date. So the Minion Day has a date. That's easy. It's right after Dominion Day. When do we have Red Shirts Day, though? I'm not sure about that one yet.
I say the start of the summer Hollywood blockbuster season.
Yeah, but that's always different. That's like having it. That's like, I guess it's like Easter. It moves around.
It's like, yeah, why not? I mean, Chinese New Year does the same thing.
Yeah,
we'll put it on a lunar. Is it like, you know how celebrations?
Is there a priesthood that can determine when the official beginning of summer blockbuster season is?
We go to the calendar Variety magazine.
Yeah, but how do you determine which week is the summer blockbuster kickoff? They don't say it on Variety. They just say what movies are out.
True, but I think we'll know. I think.
Well, because we've been doing the summer movie draft on Framerate and NSFW show for a couple of years now. I think they've been doing it for 3 years. I've been involved for two. And it's sort of hard to determine what week you definitely... Like, this week we began it with The Hunger Games at the end of March. But you could make an argument that it should have begun with the Avengers.
I would have to say I would go with the Avengers. I would go with the Avengers as the summer blockbuster.
For this summer.
Because it's clearly a summer movie.
You know what, though? If we're doing Red Shirts, should it be a summer blockbuster or should it be a fall, like, TV season?
That could work as well.
The fall TV season. It could be the first Friday in September. And then it would line up with not only Dragon Con, but Penny Arcade Expo as well.
It's true. Of course, it's also Labor Day that weekend, so the red.
Yeah, well. So then you get an extra day. I'm taking Red Shirts Day off on Friday, and then I get Labor Day off on Monday.
Perfect. That's a four-day holiday, or for a long weekend.
All right. Well, let us know in the comments, subbrilliant.com/EMW, if anyone cares, what you think of the dates. If you've got a better idea for the dates for these things, let us know. But I like it, especially the Minion Day.
It is. And the great thing is everyone has at least one red shirt. It doesn't have to be a specific red shirt. It could be a button down, right, a pullover. Right. It could be a sweater or a hoodie.
It could be a St. Louis Cardinals t-shirt.
It's true.
It could be a rain jacket. Sure. But in solidarity, I think you're right. You have to wear a red shirt on that day.
Yeah, a red shirt of some sort of shirt.
Yeah. Red Shirts Memorial Day for all the fallen. Not just the Star Trek fallen.
And then you could have a Macy's red shirt sale day.
Like a white sale? A red shirt sale?
Yeah. Or Memorial Day sale.
I have a feeling Macy's may not get on board with that, but ThinkGeek might.
Hey, there's a partner.
Yeah. Help us, ThinkGeek, celebrate Red Shirts Day whenever we decide that is. Maybe you can help us decide when it should be. Real quickly, before we wrap up, Lou G also posted on our last episode saying that Brony did not come from Bro Plus Pony. I also thought Brony came from Bro Plus Pony. Lou says it came from the /B forums at 4chan, where it was first used. Everything else I agree with, though. The audience is unique but awesome. The show is funny, and it teaches adult lessons. Bro hoof. But, okay, it came from the B forum. So I guess what he's saying is it's the B in B forums plus Pony. And there's got to be a bro.
But that doesn't make the Rony.
Yeah, that's
good. B forum pony?
Yeah. There's got to be a bro. I mean, even if it starts with B forum pony, they have to have loved. Oh, and it's bro, like a bro. Hey, bro. That's got to be part of it, I would think.
I don't know, because Brony is specifically male.
Right.
So, I don't know. Maybe someone can add more illuminating information about the whole.
If you got a link to a thread, Lou, that would be helpful. That would be illuminating. Not that we don't believe you. It's just too awesome to be like, bro, pony. How could it not be that? We want to believe, though.
I want to believe.
It's the B files on East Meets West. You want to be a brony, don't you?
I don't know. I've watched a couple episodes. It's really funny. I mean, just if you watch it and you just see all the other bits that are in that are added in, and I can see the appeal to it, appeal with it. Although I have to say, I'm not probably gonna be a lifetime watcher. I mean, just it's amusing, just like a comic strip is amusing when I see it on Sunday paper. But I don't follow it religiously.
Well, I want to say, now that we're pretty much at the end, that the Google Hangout has treated us much better this week.
Although it's delaying your video and audio by a couple of seconds now.
Is that why you're taking a little extra beat to respond to me?
Yes, I'm a little slower in responding to you because it's literally coming to me a second and a half later.
But you are hearing it. Like last week where you couldn't make heads or tails out of it. That's good.
It's garbled. It is definitely garbled. But I can make it up because I'm sort of a lipid.
You are. You're a shaman, among many other talents. Well, thanks everybody for watching or listening. You can find our website at subbrilliant.com/EMW. And you can leave your comments there. Let us know when you think Red Shirts Day should be. And we appreciate you hanging out with us. We'll see you next time.
This podcast is part of the Frog. Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.